trick is twofold there. One is, can you legally rent it out? Which again is not an issue for monthly stays, but is an issue for Airbnb. So if we do decide that Airbnb is something that we definitely want to enable, that will slightly dictate a different purchase strategy because we'll first need to investigate the listings to see whether they're feasible for a license. And then
Right.
if that's the case, then we're going to go ahead and continue with the further investigations of them.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over 2 decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. Okay, so as you might have noticed, if you're a regular listener, this episode has been a few days delayed in coming, but that's for very good reason. We're pleased to announce that ticketing for the Japan Real Estate Summit has now gone live. So early bird discounted tickets are only going to be available until Saturday, 28th February. That gives you just about a couple of weeks to still secure that discount, which is a pretty significant one, for your in-person or streaming tickets to the summit. And that's taking place on the 18th and 19th of April in a couple of months as of the publishing of this episode at the Pullman Hotel in Tamachi, Tokyo, and online via the streaming channel. So all of us are speakers, most of whom are also sponsoring this event and making it possible. Blanca Kobayashi from Arc Reform, who will be talking about how to plan a renovation project properly. Tracy Northcott from Tokyo Family Stays. Emil Gorgis from realestate.jp with an update on home loans in Japan. Matt Ketchum from Akiyaz, who will be talking about creating value via purchase and management of Akiyaz. Shumatsu Post and Brett Lee from Akiya Hub with insights on the purchase journey they've been walking their clients through. Mark Drabkin from Yen Loans, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com, Alicia Keen Wang from Axolotl Capital with some investment loan news, Chai Kanda from Shiki Properties, along with two new speakers from his team, Ben Howard and Yi Zhang. The three of them will be discussing ski and hotel investments, as well as Kyoto's hospitality market, of course. Ben Tanaka from Retired Japan, who will be talking about little-known tax quirks and tricks that you should probably be aware of if you're living in or doing business in Japan. John Cross from MailMate, sponsoring our fabulous gala dinner, and of course, yours truly. I'll be speaking, as I normally do, about cross-border purchases, investments, and otherwise, and the cultural and expectations gap between foreign buyers and their Japanese property market counterparts. We're all waiting to see you. So if you can't make it in person, the streaming tickets are quite affordable, and even more affordable if you get them again before the 28th of this month. And while they won't give you access to the private consultations and breakout room, they will allow you to float questions to be answered by the speakers live on the main stage and to network and forge connections with everyone else in the streaming chat channel. And there'd normally be at least a few dozen of you there. So this is really the next best thing to being there in the room with all of us. So hop over to the summit.realestate.jp page. That's the summit page. Ticketing is now live. Have a look at the event schedule. It should be up there today and the speaker profiles. Enjoy some of the previous event videos and presentations if you haven't attended one yet, and grab those discounted tickets today. Again, they're only available until the 28th of February. All right, so for today's episode, we speak with a Singapore-based dad, member of a family of four, who are considering holiday homes in Tokyo, but with a very intentional investment focus. So they want not just to use the property themselves, but definitely to be renting it out. hopefully profitably, throughout most of the year when they're not using it. So we talk about what they might be able to get for a budget of about $400,000 or $500,000, where to find listings, how to better understand the market, and specifically the short and medium term rentals market. We talk due diligence, capital appreciation potential as an investment strategy, and also whether these are projects that are worth borrowing for, and if so, under what terms and conditions. We then segue into a conversation about how to work with short-term stay property managers, how to assess feasibility of listings for licensing and income potential, how to potentially leverage the investment for residency, and how we manage these hybrid property projects all the way from purchase through research and licensing and onto ongoing operations. We also touch a bit about the need for incorporation and resident directorship for foreign-owned companies. Here I should mention this conversation was recorded a while ago, so don't take the prices quoted in there as gospel. They've probably changed since then. And when first-time buyers like them should be watching out for along the way. So enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Yes, please. So go ahead. Yeah, so like I mentioned in my thing, we create a family of four. It's my wife and two small kids, 6 and 2 years old. We love traveling to Japan. We've been there 4 times, twice where it was just the two of us, and then twice in the last 2 years, both in August, most recently this past August. So we've only been back for about 2.5 weeks at this point. And it was towards the end of that trip that we realized, we'll probably be coming back every year and a half. We love it so much. I'm sure, we're not the first to mention that to you. And that's where I think the process started in my head about, because I've been the one doing the financials, I've seen how much these trips cost in terms of the accommodations. And in general, what we do is we get a Airbnb in Tokyo for the duration of our stay, about 3 weeks plus. And in between, we may do trips to Osaka, Kyoto, and such, but we always have this home base in Tokyo. And on average, that costs us about $4,500, $5,000, sometimes less. And so from that experience, I just started thinking, would it be possible to maybe get a holiday home, a place that we could call our own for the duration of our stay, and then the rest of the time rent it out? And since I returned back to Toronto, I've been doing a lot of research and came across your podcast. And frankly, I feel like I've binged so much of the content you've put on your podcast.
Oh, thank you.
And as well, other people, some of whom I think you've collaborated with, like Shu Matsuo Post and a couple others, that I feel like I've got a decent foundation of just understanding the Japanese real estate market, the type of things people either invest in or purchase as holiday homes, what are the alternatives, stuff like that. And so, great content has been really helpful in building that foundation. And I think even since this call was set up, I feel like a lot of my initial questions maybe were answered, but I just really want to get into it and understand specific and see where we open this. I've got a bunch of questions around that. But the basic idea is what we look at is getting a holiday home based in Tokyo, very much looking at detached homes, something that's 2 LDK plus, budget anywhere between 40 to even as high as 70 or 80 million yen. And I've done a few financials in the background to understand, what this may look like. And like I said, the holiday home itself, to be clear, we don't want a shack. We want something that's new or newish, but we also don't want to buy something that in our days is sort of like a a forever home. It needs to
No, but I
be.
see in the listings that you've shared, I was going to say that that budget will probably mean, 20, 30 years old in Tokyo. But I see from the listings you've shared, you've actually managed to find some that are brand new from the looks of it.
Because as much as we spend a lot of time in kind of the popular tourist areas, like Akihabara, Shinjuku, Shibuya, and a bunch of other spots, we're generally comfortable with if the place was on a metro line that may be a little further out, but then connected, reasonably to some of the main lines that, like the Yamanote line, that kind of is that circular loop around those major spots. And so, I recall now, I did send you a couple of listings. I've also had the opportunity to, like do a lot more checking out stuff. In fact, just in the last couple of days, I signed up for Akiyama, using your promo code as well. To get, $5 off.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, that's the best place that I know to look for listings in English. It has almost the entire market, and the interface is fantastic.
Yeah, I found it to be probably the most comparable to some of the really good real estate websites we have here in North America. So yeah, it was really good. I did find that they don't have everything, like some of the other sites like Sumo, At Home, Lifo, seem to have some other listings that don't show up on AkiyaMark, despite the criteria being the same. So I have a
I mean,
lot of
that's
stuff.
interesting. I'm not sure how their algorithm works, but that's interesting to hear. I didn't know that.
I noticed that there weren't the same listings, and then on top of that, sometimes properties were duplicated. Like say five times on AkiyaMark, like it may show like there's five listings on the map, and then you see that it's actually the same home multiple times because maybe it's scraping from different websites. Regardless, like I've done enough initial research to kind of see that these homes do pop up that are 2LDK plus newish. Some of them aren't even completed yet, like they're set to complete in October or beyond. Some that are, in the past few months, but there's also stuff that is, 2, 3, 4 years old that hit within that price range, and generally seem to land within the Nakano-ku, Arakawa-ku, Ikebashi-ku, like the kind of
Well,
just north.
one of the first things that we'll want to dig into, because again, assuming that Airbnb or short-term stay or monthly stay, whatever the case may be, are definitely a prime criteria for you, right? You don't want to just have the house and not be able to rent it out, correct?
Yes. However, that was a question I had for you as well. Is I know different wards have different kind of criteria around the short-term stay, but from what I understand, I forget what you call month-to-month rentals or
Monthly rentals, yes.
medium-term rentals. Like that one doesn't require any regulations. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the trick is twofold there. One is, can you legally rent it out? Which again is not an issue for monthly stays, but is an issue for Airbnb. So if we do decide that Airbnb is something that we definitely want to enable, that will slightly dictate a different purchase strategy because we'll first need to investigate the listings to see whether they're feasible for a license. And then if that's the case, then we're going to go ahead and continue with the further investigations of them. But if you want to, I guess the question is that meant to be something that's actually driving some kind of profit, or is it just meant to cover your costs for when you visit?
Just meant to cover costs. I mean, if there is money left over after, great. I mean, that additional funds can of course be allocated towards our stay, which is, ideal. I don't want this to be something we put money into but loses money. Like said, there's kind of like a opportunity cost that factored in of about $5,000-$6,000, which is, the opportunity cost of us, having a Airbnb or short-term stay when we travel. So there's always kind of like that amount that I see as, okay, that's money that instead we get to keep towards a property of our own that, I'm hoping in Tokyo because it's new or newish, and we would look for a place that we would own the land rights that has some appreciation over time. So let's say in 10, 15, whatever, 20 years, if we choose to sell that. I'd love to tell you that's a given, and it definitely looks like it has been a given in the last 15 years or so, but that's Right. no guarantee. I mean, something could happen which would make Tokyo prices go down or at least stagnate for a bit, yeah? Yeah, fair enough. Like, I know that's one of the inherent just dynamics going in, which I'm okay with. It's more like from a cash flow perspective, maybe not initially, but at least over the course of a year, I wouldn't want this to be something that we lose money on. So that's why I'm interested in certain aspects of the renting out aspect, because you mentioned Airbnb, and that's something that I initially, at least, I kind of went into thinking like, oh, that's definitely something you could do, because obviously I've stayed at Airbnbs when I've been there. I understand that the challenges in the market. I also understand it's much more hands-on, even if you have a good operator, doing it for you. You have So been the listening to idea our of podcast. a lot, and so it's been very helpful to kind of dispel certain myths I may have had going into this, which has Yeah. been helpful, right? If there's no such thing as good news, bad news. It's just I want to understand the facts of the market, and so from everything I've heard, it does seem like monthly rentals or, medium-term rentals might be the ideal option, because if I recall you saying the yields are higher than a long-term tenant, not as high as Airbnb, but higher than a Well, I long-term mean, tenant. if we're comparing apples to apples, if you have a property that's strictly an investment property and it's a good enough location to attract these short-term or medium-term tenants, then yes, if it's, run smoothly and well operated and vacant for guests throughout the year, then yes, potentially a monthly or short-term stay property would earn more than a long-term residential property. But you are going to be visiting certain times of the year. I'm assuming at some point it might be in peak season of some, right? Like falling leaves or sakura season or whatever the case may be. So don't assume that the property will function as efficiently if you're using it, fairly frequently throughout the year. That's one thing. Well, And the other thing is that it depends on the management company. So depending on the area where you are, if it's attractive to guests or not. I mean, price-wise, you w might want to be on the outskirts of Tokyo, but to actually attract guests, you need to be a bit more central. So right. there's always a bit of a balancing act to be struck there. The other thing with monthly rentals is that you'll often face the dilemma because monthly tenants rent the place for a month or two, and then if they like it, they sometimes extend another month or two or three or even longer. So that then puts you in the spot of, okay, so I'm planning to come to Japan next month. There's a tenant in there. Do I tell them that they can't renew and lose the tenant? I mean, you'll have more, it's not like blocking off bits of the calendar like you do with short-term stays. It's a bit more dynamic in the sense that tenants often want to extend the leases.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So, really, the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Like I said, if this is something you're looking at having in place for 10 to 20 years, maybe more, like can't think that far into the future, but definitely one aspect of it is over the next 2 or 3 years, I've got a pretty clear idea of when it is that we may want to come back, which would be right now we're looking at, say, December 2026 or, you know, fall 2027, likely November or October. So, like, say, you know, we close on a place in 6 months' time. Like, could I do something like that where we block off the calendar for that specific month, but, you know, it's clearly communicated to the property manager that, hey, the rest of the time, it's open. Like, this isn't something where we'd be jumping back and forth multiple times a year. Like,
between you could, and all of that.
You definitely
can do that. And if you're not doing it for more than a month or two a year, then most property managers wouldn't have a problem with it. It's not going to, you know, significantly affect the profitability. But again, even if you block off, let's say you're blocking off December, and then you've got a tenant who rented the place for a couple of months from October, November, and then they want to extend. So again, you'll face that dilemma. Do you want to let them extend or do you want to tell them that, no, we're sorry, and, you know, lose the potential income?
Yeah, and those are choices we'd have to make. Have you had that experience with your clientele? Like, do you have folks who do something like this where, you know, based internationally, have a holiday home? How did they generally tend to cover the costs the rest of the time? Like in terms of rentals, I mean, like, do you have people who are doing the month to month?
Well, the costs are not that significant. You've got your annual property tax, which is going to be, I don't know, say, you're talking about 50 million yen or 60 million yen. And that could be, give me a second.
I have a spreadsheet I'm happy to share with you of like my assumptions. I will say, actually, one of the biggest costs, because when I say, you know, I don't want this to be something that costs us a lot of, you know, cash to maintain over the year. I definitely recognize that, you know, property tax, insurance, electricity, gas, water would be like kind of like the maintenance costs of the place itself plus the property management. However, the one thing that I should have mentioned at the front is, while
the property management is not really a consideration because they charge a percentage of your income. So if there's no income, they don't charge.
Okay. That's fair enough, because that was one of the biggest numbers on the sheet. But the main thing would be, in terms of the expenses to us, like say this was a place that was the equivalent of 40 million yen. That's about 400,000 Canadian dollars. Now, that, while I would be making that as an all cash payment, on our end, we don't have that kind of cash just
sitting there. Like any free cash we have, we have in registered investments and stuff like that. But what I do have is access to a fairly large home equity line of credit at a pretty good interest rate. In fact, it just dropped yesterday to like the mid fours. And I've been using that to invest in, to do leveraged investing and stuff like that because you get tax breaks and everything. So, but that said, for an amount like 400,000 Canadian, it's roughly like net financing after tax breaks would be about 9 grand a year, right? And so added to
Well, the
the
thing is,
other.
with long-term residentials in Tokyo, usually the best you can hope for is about 4%. Monthly stays or short-term stays could potentially go beyond that, but then you're just covering your interest rate. You're not going to be covering much of the costs or maybe a smidgen of it.
Yeah, I mean, net of the tax break, it's more like 2.5%. So
Oh, is it
I always
really?
think it's
Okay.
net. Because as long as if you're borrowing at 4.5, or let's just say 5 for rounding sake, if you're borrowing at 5 and you then put it towards a income generating investment, you get a tax deduction on that is about whatever your personal income thing is. So based on my other investing, that 5, the real net annual financing cost is more like 2.5. So that's why
Right.
I've been using it to invest in like the market, because the market, currently returning like 7, 8, 9%. So easily beating that, even net of like paying taxes on those. So that was my thing, was it the financing isn't like the financing is there. Right. The problem is I don't want to just be financing this, because if I were to instead put that towards an asset in North America over here, as many of your guests have mentioned, or I think I've even seen in Shu's content, it's like, in North America, you're mainly looking for capital appreciation. This isn't one of those, like the intent here isn't that. Like I'm financing to fund this thing that would be something that would be, near and dear to our hearts, to have a property in Tokyo that we call our own when we travel there. But I just want to make sure that all our costs are covered, net of even this financing. And so that's where I guess the one plug that I'm really trying to understand is, what is the potential annual income for doing monthly rentals off a property of this type in kind of the areas of Tokyo we're looking for? Like I've tried to look
Well,
at real estate rental listings, and I see stuff come up for 250,000 yen and stuff, and I go, that could work, but I need to kind of validate some of these assumptions.
I wish I could give you any validation in the sense of a guaranteed validation, but reality is, again, Tokyo would normally be getting 3 to 4% on re long-term residential. Monthly rentals have the potential to bring that up by, let's say, 50, 60% if they run really well. So maybe, I don't know, five and a bit. And short-term stays, again, if they run really, really well, could potentially double. So maybe 8, 8.5%, kind of best case. But that's all very, very optimistic projections as to how well the property will be managed, how attractive it will be to guests. And both monthly and short-term stays are, by nature, they tend to be seasonal, fluctuating. Sometimes guests book and there's a line waiting to book, and sometimes nobody shows up for 6 months. So it's very hard to give you an accurate evaluation and let alone a guarantee. But I can say that normally we would hope to at least cover that 4%. Yes.
And I forget if you clarified, but do you have clients that do stuff like this, like have the holiday home, but then
Yes,
also rent it
not
out throughout
many,
the year?
not many. We've got about a handful of them. We're mostly long-term investments, but we do have two clients in Fukuoka, one in Itoshima, which is near Fukuoka, one in Tokyo, and one in Kyoto. And those locations have all been kind of carefully selected for that purpose. So yes, they're all doing well.
I can
Okay.
tell you that we've got very long vacancies. I haven't really calculated their ROI, but it's definitely occupied throughout most of the year. So I'm assuming it definitely does satisfy that. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's essentially what we're looking for is finding a place that is suitable for this, that fits within the budget. And like if I were to think of from our point of view, over the course of the year, it's we essentially don't want to really be thinking about it that much. Like property management, would be or the oper or the short-term operator, whatever it is, would be the
Yes, with the caveat. I mean, you're not, if it's a long-term residential where the tenant is basically in place for at least 2 years, then yes, there's not much to think of unless anything happens. But with short-term and monthly rentals, I mean, you don't have to be hands-on, but I think you do want to normally keep an eye on occupancy, vacancy rates, what the competition is charging. I mean, it is more mental bandwidth consuming. You can't avoid that.
Are there like operators in market that could take that on?
In Tokyo, definitely. Don't think.
Okay. And
But
since
I mean, again,
that's kind of
they will take that on, but you definitely want to keep an eye on them, even if they're doing a good job, you know. Staffers change, they might, you know, the company might be getting a bit too busy and they don't give as much attention to the smaller properties. You always want to make sure that it's actually still profitable, right?
And is that something that you and your company offer as part of kind of like the ongoing kind of like the one of the things I've heard is
Management.
you
Yeah.
kind of
So
the management, like you source operators and such.
we definitely can. And if you end up at some point working with a more native Japanese company for management, then you probably will need somebody like us. But a lot of the operators, especially in and around Tokyo, which is, you know, very international, a lot of them will be able to service you directly in English. So you're not necessarily going to need us.
Now, if you're actively looking at property in Japan, you should check out Akiya Mart. That's Akiya hyphen Mart, Mart, akiyamart.com. It's the Zillow of Japan, built for buyers who are actively hunting for a home in Japan and want a much more Western-style web browsing experience than the typical local Japanese websites. Now, we've got an exclusive 30% off promo code for the Akiya Mart Pro annual plan. That's the one that gives you full access to Airbnb zoning maps, hazard maps, sold data, and over 500,000 listings nationwide at any given time. So if you're serious about buying in Japan and you want an easier way to search, this is the best tool that we know of. So you can use my code ZIV, ZIV at checkout and get 30% off your Akiya Mart Pro annual plan at akiyamart.com.
So, what do you recommend as the best method of understanding, is this property available for short term versus medium term? And is it a good
So
property, the location,
again,
potential view?
medium term is never an issue. It's legally, it's
Fair.
just a normal, it's a normal rental. For short-term stay licensing, there's a company that I can refer you to. They will charge 22,000 yen for the first property that they investigate in any specific municipality. And then if you got additional properties in the same municipality, 11,000 yen per property, so half the price. And they will provide a very detailed report explaining whether it's likely to obtain a Minpaku license, and if not, what you can do to amend that. If anything, same for a ryokan or hotel license. Will it potentially comply, and what can you do to amend if it doesn't? And based on that, you can choose if you want to proceed or not. But in Tokyo specifically, mind you that in Tokyo, every ward or section of the city is a completely different municipality. So if we spread too wide, we're going to have to pay them a lot of money for those investigations.
I've seen that, I've seen that. I've seen the very unique, kind of restrictions in certain areas where they may allow it, but it's only on weekends or some, and the stuff that may determine if it's close to a school and stuff, that's even harder to do because you may be looking at a ward, but you really have to like understand, is it close to any of the things that
you can't be proximal to you. So
Yep.
I understand. Okay, but yeah, it's good to know there's something out there that can kind of do this evaluation. Is it, I'm trying to think of sequence of events here, like how, because one of the challenges I have is I look at some of the properties and it's hard to tell if the property is actually still on the market. Is it still available, or has it, just has the listing just not been taken down? And so my worry is that I'm going to, invest the 20,000 yen on it to investigate a property that might not actually be on market. Like, is
No, we can definitely, as a first step, what I mean is we want to investigate that before we pour money into viewing structural inspections and whatnot. But
okay.
we can definitely contact the listing agent and see if it's still for sale before we actually go and spend money.
Let me see what questions I had. Yeah, one of the main questions I had was based on your client experience, how vacant or not are the medium or short-term properties that, are also used as holiday homes? It sounds like, they're pretty booked up, which is good. Sorry, I'm just looking at my questions here. I'll get to kind of like the working with NTI process in a second. I guess one of the things that I kind of had my head turned a little bit by binging so much of your content about, investing in properties and stuff. I guess the question I have a little unanswered is the idea of buying this myself versus buying it under a corporation that I would incorporate in Japan, with the idea that in the future something like this could be leveraged for, a visa, longer term residency, stuff like that. Like, do you have clients who are doing that?
We do, but you don't have to initial. I mean, setting up a corporation, whether it's a branch office of a foreign corporation or a wholly Japanese entity, that's going to cost you a few thousand dollars to set up, and then a few thousand dollars every year in corporate upkeep, right? So minimum corporate tax, accounting, bookkeeping, that sort of thing. I don't know that you need that at the current scale that you're considering, because a single property generating a few thousand bucks in profit is not going to get you a visa. If in the future you will expand your portfolio to that level, I mean, you can then transfer ownership over from your name to the company name. So I wouldn't do
Got
that
it.
before that actually becomes something that you need to do.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah,
I mean,
I didn't want to.
it costs a few thousand bucks to transfer them over, but it also costs a few thousand bucks every year for the corporate structure, right?
It's similar to over here for the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. The question I have then is around working with you guys. Like, what would that process look like? Like, I read the document that came through and such, but like at like I don't know where, and like person speaking, I don't know where we are at right now in this process. Like, right now it's been a lot of like research and looking at listings, and we are still kind of, I think, at the stage where we're understanding, is this something that is feasible or not? And a lot of it is through kind of just seeing what's out there in the market there. And you find these listings for 40 to 60 million yen, and you go like, oh, like, based on the financials, this could work. Like, but because the platforms aren't as, let's just use the word strong, as some of the ones we have here in Canada or North America,
Yep.
like the ones here are pretty clear as to when it was listed, when it sold, what was the list price, what was the sale price, like things like that, that
No, we
like,
don't have that here. I'm sorry.
yeah. So because of that, like, it's kind of hard to tell, like, are these like how real is the opportunity there? Like, if something for say 40 million yen popped up in a ward that's, like say Arakawa or one of those, is it getting snapped up right away, or is it sitting on the market for like, 50, 60 days, 100 days, like, you know, things like that, like those sorts of market dynamics. And also, like, I understand this is just what's being posted, but there may be a lot of other opportunities that just, you know, the local real estate agents might know. And only once you engage with someone will you actually get a sense of that. So curious as to like how to really kind of understand more about like, you know, what's actually feasible for us within our criteria.
What I would normally do for a plan like yours is I would early on in the process, I'd loop in a short-term stay property manager who handles these kinds of rentals and get them
Okay.
to chime in on the listings that we are select. So I guess the order of things would be first you float your potential listings to me. I will look at them from a purely real estate purchase perspective and maybe point out some red
Okay.
flags about the structure or the land or whatever. And then once we're
Okay.
satisfied and have a final short list, I forward that to a short-term stay property manager to get their feedback on which of these listings would have the potentially higher profit potential.
Okay.
And then based on that opinion, I would then float them to the licensing feasibility company to see. I mean, they might, the short-term stay manager might be able to give us a bit of feedback about licensing feasibility, but if they're not
Okay.
sure, then we can then float them over to the company that will, you know, charge us and give us a detailed report.
Okay. That kind of makes sense to help narrow down kind of, you know,
So where
is
we
going to
would
be
fit
this
in.
sample.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in Webdisk Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top of the list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off. On again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com. And his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Yeah, so where we would fit in all of that is so what you've read in the document about the full purchase facilitation of service that we cannot do until the end of the year.
Okay.
You might have heard that on the podcast before, but what we have been doing is we'll put you in touch directly with the real estate agent, directly with the short-term stay property manager, directly with the company checking on feasibility for the licensing. And we're happy to either introduce you and leave you to it, but we don't charge for introduction, don't feel obliged to hire us. Or if you want us
Okay.
to guide the process and make sure due diligence is done right and all the red flags are raised and documents are reviewed before you sign them, then we can come in for a few $100 and guide the project or hold your hand and guide the agent on what due diligence we want done. Just make sure you're not making any costly mistakes.
Okay, and would that also include finding or sourcing a property manager and maybe a short-term rental operator if they're different or the same. But, would that include that as well?
Well, again, I'll put you in touch with one who will accompany us throughout the process to give us feedback on listings. And then post settlement, if you want to hire them for management, you will probably be able to do that directly. And then if for any
Okay.
reason you're feeling that, they could be doing a better job, then you can always bring us in and we'll try to find a replacement for them.
Okay. That's good to know. Yeah, I appreciate that. Like, I like this as a process to help narrow down kind of our criteria and just understanding of what we can accomplish in there. So from what I see, forward the listings that I've seen over to you, and in tandem, you said you could put us in touch with a English speaking, I'm sure, real estate agent.
Yep, definitely.
How do they generally tend to communicate? Is it mostly virtual, or do I set up a call with them? Like, how do your clients generally like work with them?
Well, the ones that we work with, the ones that are more technologically savvy and able to handle everything remotely, usually default to WhatsApp or LINE chat groups.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
That's
Yeah,
their easiest,
that
that's
sounds
the
good.
easiest way. And it's definitely the easiest way for me to jump in with feedback if you do want us consulting on the purchase.
Okay.
But otherwise, email is always fine. Just takes everyone a bit longer to get to it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you've answered, I think, all of the questions I have. I'm sorry, I'm just going through my list to make sure. Oh, it's just one thing that, going back to kind of the whole thing of the business manager visa and stuff, just like I've heard that come up a few times on some of your content. And I think the one question that I had looking at that is, I know Japan's changed the requirements, the capital requirements are higher,
Yeah,
and
for mid-October, that's probably going to be 30 million yen capital and hiring at least one or two full-time people.
and you need a physical office. So
Oh,
I don't know,
that I think you always needed to some degree or another,
okay.
right?
Okay, so this isn't strictly a real estate question, I guess, but just on that whole aspect, like, in your experience, do people, like, two things on the physical office side, like, is it as simple as, can I find something cheap and cheerful to rent out that is a commercial space, but it just needs to be a, for lack of better words, like a small unit in a building somewhere that
Yes,
has
and
a desk and a computer.
you'll probably find that the cheaper options are actually in residential buildings that where the owner union allows commercial use. Those tend to be the
Okay.
cheapest units.
Okay. And from the one employee requirement, like, is there has this led to the creation of a market of, individuals who put themselves out there to be hired as, directors of these companies or something like that? Like, is
I
there something like that in?
wouldn't call it a market. It's a service that, professionals who are comfortable with serving foreign clients potentially would offer to do. So we work with accountants and lawyers who charge somewhere between 30 to 50,000 yen a month for this kind of service. We can do it at our
Okay.
company as well for about for not about exactly 22,000 yen a month.
Sorry, and that is for
But
what?
I. Well, for directorship representation of your company.
Oh, okay. So that would meet the requirement then of
Well, that would be the requirement for all kinds of things, but not for just purely purchasing and running the property. You don't need that. You don't need a director for that.
Okay. No, I was curious about that thing then. Okay, sounds like there are options there, because candidly, like, from where I look at it, is I just don't have a network in Japan. So, do I post a job like when the time comes, or like how does something like that work, right? Like,
But I mean,
or do people
you're
who
not really hiring or employing anyone. You're just setting up a company, purchasing properties under the name of the company, or transferring them over from your individual whole ownership at some point. And then you normally would outsource to management companies or companies like ours to run it for you. You're not actually
Yes.
going to be hiring them. I don't see why you would require a director unless you're thinking
down the track potentially for loans, but then you can hire the director when that time comes. You don't need to have them on the
When that
schedule.
time comes. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know the visa or whatever, like required you to have a history of having someone employed. So,
But for the
okay.
visa, you would. No, for the visa,
Yeah, this is.
technically you don't need a director, a resident director for the visa. But if you want to then set up a business bank account and potentially rent an office, those kinds of things tend to be a bit more smooth when there's a resident representative director. Yes.
Got it. Okay. That's helpful to know that those options are out there. Trying to think. I think that's most of my questions. Like I feel like you've answered, all kind of like the outstanding stuff from having looked at both your content and some of
Are
the
you
others
gonna,
on
by the way,
there.
are you gonna be, I don't think you're gonna be in Japan, but are you joining our summit online at least? We've got one coming up in 3 weeks' time. Because
Oh.
you'll meet a lot of people who are doing exactly what you're planning to do on the summit. Even
Okay.
if you're attending online, there's the Zoom chat room, which has a lot of people tuning in who at least one or two of them would be in the same situation, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, if you could send me kind of like the event details and stuff like that, that would be something I'm interested in. I did watch some of the recordings. I think it might have been from your spring one. And
Yeah,
I
the
agree. It
recordings will
was
always
pretty
be
interesting.
available. That's free of charge. You don't need a ticket for that. But I mean, for networking
Okay.
with people who have done similar things, it might be a good idea to attend live.
Okay. Yeah. Send me the invite details. Like I'll follow up on our conversation with kind of, some of the stuff we talked about as next steps. But yeah, if you could reply as well
Yeah, so
with
what
the
I'll do
event
is
details. Yeah.
I'll send you just a blank email. I'll just reply to your last email with a blank signature. And that
Okay.
has, number one, it has the link to the summit. And secondly,
Okay.
it has my mobile number in the signature. If you
Okay.
want to add me on WhatsApp or Line or whichever you're more comfortable with, then
WhatsApp.
I'll be
Yeah.
able to quickly take action there as well.
Okay. That's perfect. Yeah, I guess maybe an open question I have for you, kind of the thing I always ask people, I don't know what I don't know. What are some of the pitfalls of, what it is that, that we are considering doing, right? This idea of a holiday home, use it for maybe 1 month in a year, the rest of the time it's rented out, looking to just cover the costs. What are
I'd
kind of
say pretty much
blind
what we
spots?
discussed, pretty much what we discussed so far, but there would be many other aspects related to the purchase itself, which I mean, this call would be a bit too short to expand on them, but the way they're built, the age of the property, whether they're city sewage or not, whether they have a big, robust garden or yard, which would require expensive maintenance, whether they're built on a retaining wall, which might need to be reconstructed if and when an earthquake. I mean, there are a lot of nuances to reviewing property listings, but that's not something I can give you in advance. That's something we'll have to
Of
review one
course.
by one, and then I'll give you feedback about those listings.
Of course. But say you did that kind of like media criteria from a actual kind of like execution standpoint, like based on your experience of your own clients, like you've seen that stuff like this is like, yeah, people do this. Like it isn't something that is unusual, right? Like people do have their places and they can also rent them out and runs just fine. Like you've got clients with a history of doing this from what you mentioned.
Yes, that's all very doable. The question would be whether a particular listing that you're interested in would work for short-term stay or maybe only for monthly stay, depending on the local municipality regulations. So that's a case by case thing.
Okay. Yeah, I think that was the extent of the questions I had. So I'll follow up with the things you mentioned, but yeah, really appreciate your time and your feedback on this. Like this is something that, we're quite excited about and, looking to execute as we just learn more about what the potential is out there. Sorry, you broke off there a bit. I didn't.
Oh, we're happy to assist. We're here. Let us know when you want to get started.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much. And yes, please do send me the event details.
That is something I'm interested in as well.
Yeah, I've already emailed that a few minutes ago.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
We'll be in
Sean.
touch.
Great talking to you.
Take
Talk to you
care.
soon.
Have a good
You
evening.
too.
Bye-bye.
So, yes, great in-depth conversation there about what it takes to purchase and run a real functional, profitable hybrid short-term stay slash holiday home property in Tokyo or anywhere in Japan. And as mentioned right at the end there, the Japan Real Estate Summit, again, which you can still grab discounted tickets for if you're listening to this before the 28th of February, 2026, is where you can definitely meet more people who are doing exactly that, or whatever your individual dream property project looks like. There's bound to be someone in the room doing it or planning to do it, or somebody who's already done it. So if you know you'll be available in person in Tokyo or online on the 18th and 19th of April in a couple of months' time from now, summit.realestate.jp is where those tickets are waiting for you. Now, we can't let you go without telling you all about Yen Loans, our latest sponsor. They're a new non-bank lender offering financing to non-residents of Japan for purchases of Tokyo condominiums, soon to be expanding to other major cities as well. So definitely hit them up if you're looking to purchase in Osaka, Fukuoka, Kyoto, or any other big city too. And that's for any purpose, whether it's a holiday home, investment rental, or a combination of both. Without any requirement for residency, a Japanese bank account, a Japanese corporate structure, or representative director, any of these things, and with a streamlined application process too. So reach out to them through the link in our show notes and let them know that you found them on the Japan Real Estate Podcast. And if you're quick enough to be one of the first 10 completed applications, you'll receive a 25% discount. That's 50,000 yen off the 200,000 yen application fee. To qualify, apply through the link in our show notes again, or enter the code JREYL on their website, yenloans.com. And that's it from us for this episode, folks. Huge thank you for tuning in. Please do follow and subscribe to the show if this is your first time listening, and we'd love it if you could like and even share this episode with anyone you think might find interest in it. But even more importantly, we love hearing from you. So please let us know what you thought about this episode or the podcast overall in the comments section here on our social media channels. We've got a very active Facebook group and business page, both under the name Japan Real Estate on Facebook. And that's also the name and URL of our YouTube channel if you'd like to follow us there, Japan Real Estate on YouTube as well. And we'd, of course, appreciate your rating or review on Spotify or on the Apple Store or wherever you're tuning in from. Hope to have you with us again. Have a great rest of the day or night ahead. よろしく。